On Monday, December 24th, Prison Pipeline hosts will feature your holiday messages to your loved ones in prison, as well as greetings from prisoners for those on the outside. Email your message to kbooppc@gmail.com or snail mail your holiday message to KBOO Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Then tune in on Monday, December 24th at 6:30 p.m. Again, that's kbooppc@gmail.com or mail KBOO Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. And happy holidays from the Prison Pipeline Collective every Monday evening at 6:30 p.m.
Yo. KBOO is excited to be part of the 2018 Willamette Week Give Guide. This year, Willamette Week and KBOO are challenging our community to give with their dollars and take action by showing up in real life. KBOO has been showing up for over 50 years. Give to KBOO today and you get full access to the Chinook Book app, plus freebies from Laughing Planet, Gluten Free Gem, Wii Press, and Nosa Familia Coffee. You can contribute right now at kboo.fm/give or call 503-231-8032. Support KBOO, where music makes the movement.
Baby, you understand me now.
Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding the institution of incarceration. We're here with Lauren Regan from the Civil Liberties Defense Center based in Eugene, Oregon. How you doing, Lauren?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into the work that you do, and then from there, the formation and long enduring important work that the CLDC is doing now?
Sure. I have been a public interest lawyer for the last 20 years, and about 15 years ago, I started up the Civil Liberties Defense Center. At that time, I had basically come from an environmental and animal rights background, went to law school to sort of fill a niche that I saw was sort of an unmet need of the movement, and we have basically been doing, we represented almost 3,000 activists for free in the last 15 years. We also do a lot of police and government misconduct litigation, so police brutality and unlawful government spying are common parts of that. We also defend organizations and activists that are victims of slap suits, which are when corporations try to sue activists to silence them. And then I've kind of developed somewhat of a specialty in representing people who are subpoenaed to grand juries who intend to resist the grand juries, you know, intend to not snitch on the movement, basically. We are a fairly staunch organization with regard to non-cooperation with the state when it comes to movement solidarity. And let's see. I guess as a result of defending activists, you know, every once in a while, probably more often than we'd like, some of those activists do end up being incarcerated. So we've dealt with several different federal and state prison failure to provide adequate medical care, unlawful disciplinary proceedings, et cetera, you know, related things, especially when it comes to radical activists being imprisoned. Unique issues often arise for them that we've tried to specialize in and make sure that we stay up to date on, you know, all of those components. And then more recently, our organization started up a digital security for activists program where we train activists and organizers and movements on how to best protect their digital communications and how to organize electronically without giving up everything you say and do to the state that is generally part of the problem with most activist campaigns these days.
It's a huge scope of work, and what you provide to the community is amazing. And some of that also includes these kind of Know Your Rights trainings, which are a combination of understanding different ins and outs of state and federal regulations around different things, especially being picked up or questioned by a police or law enforcing agent. Another piece there is the whole expungence of previous offenses and whatnot. And we were talking about the timeliness of that when it comes to, you know, kind of quote unquote holiday season here or whatever, but we're definitely near, you know, end of the year. And what people can do to kind of expunge certain things. So can you talk about what that looks like and how that works? Maybe some people don't even know what the term even means or refers to at all. So,
sure. Yeah. You know, when I first started defending activists many years ago, there were folks, you know, in their early 20s, a lot of college students, that would engage in civil disobedience, get arrested, end up taking, you know, some kind of basic plea deal. And then for others, you know, it may be more serious convictions that they end up with on their criminal record. And I personally have always felt like expungement, which basically means a motion to seal your criminal record, is important because you never know what the next chapter of your life is going to be. Like, even for very mundane activist-related convictions, you know, I've had a number of past clients that have decided to go to nursing school or to apply to be teachers. And whenever you are going into a profession that requires background checks or licensing, making sure that your record is as clean as possible really reduces the amount of, you know, BS that you have to deal with, you know, with human resources or any kind of like board or licensing committee that you're using. And so the way expungement works is if you've been convicted of a misdemeanor or a Class C felony, and occasionally a Class B felony, you are, and I should say that this is specific to Oregon right now, and I'll tell you why that's important, but if you're convicted and you have completed your probation, you know, you paid the fines you were supposed to, you did what the court ordered you to do, then if you have a single conviction on your record, you are eligible to legally seal up that record 3 years from the date of the conviction. If you have two or more convictions on your record, then you have to wait 10 years from the date of the last conviction to expunge all of it. And in order to expunge your record in Oregon, you have to file some documents with the court. There is a filing fee. You also have to submit a set of your own fingerprints, because they basically do a background check to make sure you haven't been off committing crimes, you know, other places. But as long as that check comes back that you did what you're supposed to do and you haven't been out there breaking the law, then the court signs an order that seals your record so that you are legally allowed to say that you were never arrested or convicted of that crime. And the order gets sent out to all Oregon law enforcement agencies that basically says, delete this off your record. So even if you were to, let's just say, like, apply for a job and your employer uses some private database, and the private database, you know, had in its records that you had this, you know, disorderly conduct conviction on your record, well, if the employer says, well, you said you weren't convicted of anything and we think you were convicted, you know, you just simply tell them, well, you need to call and confirm that with the court because I've never been convicted of a crime. And then they call the courthouse or they get on the court records, and all of a sudden there's no record of you being convicted at all, and they just chalk it up to an error on their end. You know, they're never told, oh, yeah, they expunged their record. You know, they're just basically told no records exist for that person. And like I said, it literally gives you the power to answer the question, have you ever been convicted of a crime? You know, you are legally allowed to answer no. You know, you've never been convicted of a crime. Now, certain offenses are never eligible for expungement. The most common is DUI. Driving under the influence of intoxicants. That's never expungible because the more times you get arrested for that, the worse your punishment is, and they track those for your whole life, basically. And then traffic citations are also something that is never expungible. Other than that, you're looking at things like most Measure 11 crimes, which are mandatory minimum sentence crimes in Oregon. You know, serious crimes like sex abuse and murder, things that, you know, you kind of common sense would say you probably will never get that off your record. It's probably true. Now, the reason I say that this is specific to Oregon is our neighbor to the north, Washington, has no expungement process. So every conviction that you get in Washington, you basically live with for the rest of your life. So Oregon and quite a number of other states that have expungements are basically giving you sort of like a do-over, you know, the ability to clean up your record and have, you know, no blemishes on it is pretty valuable. The filing fees, you know, the reason that Adam and I started talking about this recently is that it seems these days that every year the filing fees are increasing to have your record expunged, and the amount of time that it's taking the agencies to review your fingerprints and to come back with a green light, you know, to expunge is taking longer and longer. And so if you were ever putting off expunging your record, now would definitely be the time to do it. Expunging your record is really easy as long as you have a copy of your judgment. You know, as long as you still have paperwork that is going to give you the case number and what day you were convicted, you know, what courthouse you were in, et cetera, et cetera. You do need some basic information in order to be able to fill out the forms. And the forms can be obtained on county websites. Like if you go to the Linn County Circuit Court website, there will be a little packet of forms that's called Motion to Set Aside Record, and that is just another term for expungement. You can also hire lawyers to do the expungement process for you, but unless you had some kind of complicating factor, I do think it is possible for people to do the, you know, to expunge their record on their own behalf. They may have to call up a local courthouse or go into, you know, the courthouse where they were convicted and get copies of their records in order to be able to fill out that paperwork. But once you've got that filled out, then you go down to your local sheriff's office. You pay, I think, $15 to get a certified set of fingerprints done. And then there are instructions on the process that you have to go through to basically get those balls in motion so that ultimately you get that court order out the other side. Now, you know, especially for people that have one conviction on their record, it's almost more important that as soon as you're eligible, you get that taken care of and you get it expunged. Because if you, for whatever reason, end up getting a second conviction, you now have to wait 10 years from the date of that last conviction. So, you know, you might just have one disorderly conduct on your record and you've thought, you know, I don't need to expunge this, you know, for what I do for a living, you know, nobody's going to care if I have this disorderly conduct. Well, that's probably true, but 5 years from now, if you end up with some more serious conviction on your record, or you've got some licensing board that wants no criminal record whatsoever, you know, now you're waiting 10 years beyond the term of that last mm-hmm. conviction, which makes a big difference in most people's lives.
It's a long time.
Especially with regard to activist cases.
Yeah. For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. And we're here with Lauren Regan from the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene, Oregon. So, Lauren, now, I don't know if you have a percentage or something like that, if there's any figure that kind of shows how prolific the frequency is in which people are actually applying for expungence. Is it common now that people are doing it a lot, or do you still feel like it's something that is still not utilized enough?
I would definitely say that it's not utilized at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually really rare that someone will come back to us and, you know, if we represented them, we always keep a set of their paperwork and their documents mm-hmm. in our files, because we hope that folks that we've represented will come back to us and say, we want to expunge our record, you know, can you give us, you know, the paperwork? And we always do. And I would say, you know, we are lucky if once a year someone will contact us and either ask for our help in expunging their record or ask for the underlying documents. And it's not only is it really rare, but we generally, you know, the CLDC generally tends to have a lot of clients that are around, you know, college age to 30 years old, just because, you know, that's when most people in their lives have the mm-hmm. ability to go get arrested protesting and stuff right. like that. And that's also an age group where, you know, they're just starting out on careers, they're, you know, maybe finishing up school, like, you know, it's a major time period where if you were going to expunge your record, that's when, you know, you should be doing it. And it's really, really rare that we see anyone. And I think that goes across the board to the community as a whole. You know, it's only about maybe, you know, $300 to seal up your record from start to finish, compared to, you know, the price that you're going to pay in lost income, lost jobs, you know, all sorts of other consequences from potentially having stuff on your record. You know, if you're eligible to get it off your record, you should do so while you still can, you know.
Mm-hmm. So does it come from a historic case? You know, was there something that like made a particular precedent for this concept, or does this kind of go way back in legalese? Or,
well, it's statutory, meaning it's based in Oregon law, Oregon criminal law, and I think that you know, the legislative history of it was that there should be a way for people to sort of earn their way back to quote-unquote, you know, society, you know, mm-hmm. the ability to get back into the workforce and stuff like that. So other than that, I'm not really sure mm-hmm. where yeah. the process came about. I think that its origins actually are, you know, in British common law, you have to request a pardon from the Queen. And even in Canada today, you know, if you've ever been arrested in Canada, you have to ask for a pardon from the Queen in order to be able to come back
oh, wow.
to Canada from the U.S. So at least we don't have to do that here.
Yeah, you had to ask Trump, right? That could be problematic. So,
yes,
well,
it could.
So if Washington is difficult compared to, like, Oregon on the West Coast, California on the West Coast, other states on the East Coast, Midwest, and any ones kind of worth mentioning? I mean, as far as like exemplifying states that are doing this that are also easier for other people that might be listening outside?
Well, I think, you know, related to things like expungement, obviously, you know, Florida just gave the right to vote to a bunch of folks that had felonies on their records. Like, there are some advances that are being made in legislatures around the country to just sort of undo some of the damage from the criminalization state. The East Coast, you know, the Northeast in particular, has really similar laws to Oregon, California. I was actually pretty surprised to learn that Washington had no pathway to clean up your record like Oregon, because we share so many other laws, you know, along the West Coast. But that is the deal. There's also no expungement normally offered in federal cases either. So if you're being prosecuted by the feds, normally there is no way for you to erase that from your record.
So on this theme of people having things on their record, there are many people that do currently, from recent activism that you've been talking about, and everything from the defenders around the Dakota Access Pipeline and so many other different movements, people challenging white supremacy and things of that nature. What's going on on the ground as far as maybe stuff that CLDC is working on, or at least parallel cases you think are kind of worth mentioning to put out there that people might not know about, or maybe wanting some more clarity or updates on?
Sure. Well, with regard to Standing Rock and the water protectors, there are still five water protectors that are in federal prison right now. Red Fawn, Little Feather, Dion, and Rattler are all folks that are in federal jail. And then there's one guy, Angry Bird is his name, that is serving a sentence in Fort Yates, North Dakota, as well. And you can get, you know, holiday season is always really hard on folks that are incarcerated and away from their families. These folks are, you know, very clear political prisoners. You know, they really did, you know, not much more than defend the water that their, you know, that their communities rely on. Waterprotectorlegal.org has a whole page with that updates all of their mailing addresses. So if folks want to send a holiday card, you know, don't forget to follow the usual protocols for writing to political prisoners in terms of what to include or not. But you might want to check that out and send them something to raise their spirits over this holiday time period.
Yeah.
And I know that, I think it's called Beyond Bars, Books Beyond Bars. It's a New York City-based group.
Yeah.
They are sending books to political prisoners this holiday season. So if you want to, you know, help send a book to somebody who is incarcerated for the holiday season, they're a great organization too. Yeah, especially because most of the water protectors are doing relatively little downtime comparatively. You know, Dion Ortiz has 16 months. Little Feather, 36 months. Rattler, 36 months. So with good time, you know, in the federal system, that goes by somewhat fast, but, you know, every day that you are away from folks that you love and from your community is a long, long time. So I would suggest, you know, looking on that website. They've got some tips on how to write to prisoners if you've never done it before. And that would be a great, you know, I know the CLDC, our holiday party is a political prisoner writing event as well. So we just get a bunch of postcards and old holiday cards and ask people to take 5 minutes and, you know, write one, and then we package them up and send them off. And so, you know, if you're planning to have friends over for the holidays, you know, think about maybe doing something like that with your friends, and, you know, really being thankful that, you know, you're not locked up this holiday season, because especially with Trump in office, you know, you never know who's going to be next in these political times. So.
Yeah. Speaking of him, I guess unfortunately, but I mean, are there still any cases or pending, you know, things from a lot of the protesting that was going on when he came in office?
You mean like the J-20?
Yeah, things of that nature.
From the inauguration and, and whatnot?
Yeah.
My understanding is that all of the J-20 cases have now resolved. I actually was not involved in them, but I believe that the last group of folks went to trial, so that those are now resolved. But obviously there have been so many, you know, luckily I would say for our democracy, there have been so many protests in and around Trump and Kavanaugh and, you know, just all the other debacles that have happened in the last year, and I think will continue to happen, you know, with regard to the caravan and, you know, Trump's love of Nazis and, you know, everything else that he's got going on. I think, you know, since he has taken office, we have had basically unprecedented requests for CLDC services, whether that is representing frontlines communities or doing Know Your Rights trainings. You know, because I think when times get stressful and scary and you've sort of got a fascist in the White House, it's really important to know and understand your rights. And I think it's also really important to almost redouble your efforts and make sure that the activism you are engaged in is strategic and effective, because the risk is higher. But, you know, our motto is, you know, assert your rights, we've got your back. And, you know, and I think that is, you know, very true, especially in these times. You know, we may have a fascist or an authoritarian in the White House right now, but we also still have a constitution and, you know, a justice system, and, you know, we are allegedly a country of laws and rules. So, you know, if we all get scared into submission as a result of, you know, a tyrant in the White House, then he wins without even having to do anything. You know, if we all become afraid and apathetic, then that's a victory for him and his kind. You know, I think in the face of any kind of anxiety we might have about the consequences, it's almost more important in these times to make sure that people are out on the streets and, you know, and really being effective in the activism that they undertake, whatever, you know, the movement or cause.
Right. Well, knowledge is power, and it's kind of under heightened surveillance too. I know you always stress the opportunity and importance sometimes for people to file for a FOIA request, Freedom of Information, and we only got a minute or two, but you want to just say something kind of quick on that?
Sure. I mean, you know, the way that I track and keep up on the tactics used by the feds and by, you know, state and local governments is by getting their own documents out through public records and FOIA. You can FOIA your own FBI record online. These days, it really pretty much requires you to also file a subsequent federal lawsuit because our FOIA system is so broken right now. But we get all sorts of great stuff out of FOIAs and public records. You know, it's amazing how bumbling a lot of the investigative agencies actually are. And when you, you know, read their own reports and their own records, you know, to see who they think we really are and how they think we operate, you realize that we actually give them a lot more credit than they deserve.
Right, exactly. So we'll definitely, Lauren, thanks so much, and hopefully we'll follow up again soon on these things, on these matters, and people who, whether you're in Oregon or outside, should check out cldc.org for different resources and how you can also get in touch with CLDC. Also looking for other legal resources or help if you're in other places outside of the state. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook, or Facecrack, as Lauren calls it. And thanks again to Lauren Reagan from the Civil Liberties Defense Center. Lauren, we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Adam.
Good night. Big thanks to our engineer, Michael Fictalis, and thank you for tuning in. Free them all.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Alternativity on Saturday and Sunday, December 15th and 16th at Matter in Portland. Alternativity is a holiday pop-up featuring the radical prints, posters, and apparel of the Just Seeds Artist Cooperative, Eberhardt Press, The Far Woods, and Letra Chueca Press. Again, that's Alternativity, Saturday and Sunday, December 15th and 16th, from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Matter, 811 East Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.